Welcome to Dealer Driven, where the rubber meets the road to success.
Want to boost sales, sharpen leadership skills, and keep your dealership setting the pace? NADA Education delivers hands-on, real-world strategies that work. From education subscriptions through the academy, we help you drive performance every day. Shift into high gear at nada.org/education.
Welcome to Dealer Driven. I'm Michael Hayes.
And I'm Cameron Wilson. Today, we're taking a closer look at the policy issues shaping the automotive retail industry right now, from tariffs and advertising regulations to right-to-repair legislation and efforts to combat catalytic converter theft.
Joining us today are two leaders from NADA and ATD who spend every day advocating on behalf of car, truck, and commercial truck dealers in Washington. Paul Mitri serves as Executive Vice President of Public Policy for NADA, and David Bell is the President of the American Truck Dealers, or ATD.
Together, they're working directly with lawmakers and regulators on some of the biggest issues impacting dealers and their businesses, from proposed bans on Chinese vehicles to tax policy, compliance concerns, and strengthening the franchise system.
Today, we'll break down what dealers need to know, what changes may be coming, and how NADA is working to make sure dealer voices are heard every day on Capitol Hill and in the administration. Let's get started.
Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Wonderful. And David, also, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Terrific. Let's start with Paul. Let's get started by talking about some of the important accomplishments that your team has crossed off their to-do list so far this year.
Well, thank you. I don't know that we're at the point where we can say we've crossed anything off, although we certainly feel as though very good progress has been made. And really on the legislative front with the surface transportation bill, and maybe just a little context on this. So every 5 years, Congress needs to reauthorize the surface transportation bill. This is what funds our roads and our rail projects. This year, the funding is set to expire by September 30th. So they need to continue that. And it's usually done on a bipartisan basis. And the challenge with the surface transportation bill is anything auto-related where a proponent of a certain measure is looking for how do I get it through Congress, they see this as a vehicle for doing that. In some ways, that can be helpful to us. It presents some opportunities for things that we want to advance. But in other ways, it presents challenges because there's legislation out there that we do not think is favorable. Now, in terms of progress, we really think there's two issues where things have progressed very well, but they're by no means over. And again, a lot of credit to our legislative team, to our grassroots network, to ATs, all really working in concert to advance these causes. One is federal preemption of state franchise law. Even though it may not be the intent of the drafters, there are several bills out there, such as the deployment of AVs, where the sponsors of the legislation want to be able to preempt state law so it does not stand in the way, in this case, of the deployment of AVs. And that goal is fine. However, the concern is when it bumps up against state franchise law that's designed to protect both dealers and their customers. Our legislative team, again, ATA's grassroots network, did a great job in trying to ensure that language is inserted into that bill that would prevent federal preemption of state franchise law. So we're very pleased with that, although it's not over. Another key issue, right to repair, where some great progress has been made. This is the attempt of the aftermarket community, of the independent repair shops, to get a lot of data they say that they need in order to perform repair work. What we've pointed out is right now they have the data they need. There was a 2014 MOU on the light duty side and a 2015 MOU on the heavy duty side that made sure that OEMs provide independent repair shops what they need in order to perform repairs. And the proof is in the pudding. Today, independent repair shops have 75% of the post-warranty repair market. So what have we done where we talk about real progress that's been made? Well, a key committee, House Energy and Commerce, just recently approved a measure that is greatly watered down from what the proponents of this legislation were seeking. They were seeking things that were hugely problematic to dealers. That would also include preemption. And again, our entire team working to push back on that was able to get the bill where these objectionable provisions were struck from it. So what has emerged? It's called the Repair Act, but it's really the Repair Act in name only. It's a sliver of what it was before, and it's something that we think is not going to threaten dealers unlike the original legislation. So we're not there. A lot more chapters to be played out, but we do think great progress has been made.
That's excellent. Well, since we're talking about bipartisan bills, Paul, can you tell us a bit more about the bipartisan bills introduced in the House and Senate to ban Chinese-made vehicles in the U.S.?
Yes. So one thing, and this is very refreshing on Capitol Hill these days where you have so much disagreement between the parties, but one area where there is broad consensus, both between Republicans and Democrats, and also within the auto industry with OEMs, dealers, and suppliers, is that Chinese OEMs should not be allowed into the U.S. market for a whole host of reasons. And what Senator Bernie Moreno from Ohio, Republican, and Elise Slotkin, a Democrat from Michigan, what they have joined up to do is propose legislation that would ensure that Chinese OEMs cannot enter the marketplace. Now, some may ask, well, what's the situation today? There's actually a rule from the Department of Commerce. It's called the Connected Vehicle Rule that does not allow them to enter the market. However, this is legislation that would strengthen that by making it a matter of federal statute. They're both working to try to generate support. And again, this is something that there's broad consensus on. So we certainly hope that this is an effort that will succeed.
Terrific. David, quick question. When are you going to get your CDL?
I'm working on it now, Michael.
Working on that. Okay. The real question, Paul talked about the state of the right to repair bill, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, right to repair is kind of maybe a misnomer for the current bill realistically, but it sounds good in theory, but why is the current legislation, the Repair Act, unnecessary? And how could our members actively oppose the bill or support the watered down bill, as Paul says, that we have in place right now?
Yes, I appreciate it. And you know, I think Paul did a really great job of summarizing it. And I would echo, you know, quite a bit of what Paul said and maybe give a little bit just from the truck deal perspective. But, you know, if you look at the original text, there were a lot of controversial provisions that did need improvement in order for, you know, the bill to have the support of the dealers from both the, you know, the light duty and the heavy duty truck side. So, you know, again, just to capture it, you know, there were a number of concerns related to vehicle privacy, cybersecurity, and overall safety. And these were all issues that truck dealers have essentially been consistently and clearly opposed to since the beginning or the introduction of HR 1566. So yeah, I think when you look at from where the bill was to the current state of the bill, you know, we're certainly very grateful for the advocacy efforts of our grassroots network, but we're also very grateful for the chairman and the committee working with us in such a close fashion to come up with a product that does address the complex problems with the Repair Act itself. So, you know, codifying the light and the truck MOUs, you know, that is key, and also having an FTC study issue on the matter, you know, are things that within that bill that NADA, ATD ended up supporting.
Great. I guess it's also great to highlight the fact that it still could be changed. So we're still, as you said earlier. So Paul, do you have any other additional thoughts you'd like to share about the right to repair before we walk away from it?
Yeah, I would just simply say, you know, every time you hear right to repair, put it in quotes. It's a misnomer. The right to repair exists, and not only does it exist, it's being exercised when independent repair shops have 75% of the post-warranty market. So it's not a title that we accept. Of course, it's the one the proponents are using. They have the right to repair. The MOU is taking care of this issue, and the legislation, as significantly revised, is much preferable to what was initially proposed, which would have been harmful to dealers.
Absolutely. So I think this is probably top of mind for all of our members. Paul, what was driving the FTC's recent surge in advertising warning letters? And what should our members do now to stay compliant?
Well, the FTC has long been concerned really about kind of two key issues with advertising. One is just deception And the other is, what is advertised not being honored at a dealership? And this is something they really addressed with great force back in March when they sent out these 97 letters, which they also intend to follow up with enforcement actions. They're very focused on addressing this. And a couple points, Cameron, I think are important here. One, because so many questions have been asked, if you speak to the FTC and certainly the head of the Bureau of Consumer Protection, Chris Mafarge, that oversees all the enforcement actions, if you were to ask them, you know, what is your concern here? He would say it's very basic. We just look at it through the eyes of an ordinary, reasonable consumer. Can you figure out when you look at an ad what's going on, and can you comparison shop? Or are things buried, not honored, they're applicable only to a small percentage, et cetera, et cetera? All these things that can obscure the ability to comparison shop, if those are present, it's a problem. If I go to the dealership and I think I can get a vehicle for $50,000 and I can't walk out of there unless I spend $53,000, that's a problem. So they would say it's very, very basic. Now, of course, we know there's more issues involved. They've put out information. A lot of people have questions. So we did do a webinar in which the FTC chair came on and Chris Mafarge came on, answered a bunch of questions. They will follow up with more frequently asked questions. I wouldn't expect those immediately, but they do intend to do that. In terms of what dealers can do, just looking at the warning letters, I think there's just a couple basic things. First, that most prominent price in the ad, make sure it includes everything. That's the dock fee. Anything that's not governmental, you have to put into that figure. It needs to be the most prominent. Also, of course, it needs to be applicable to 100% of the customers. If it's applicable to 50%, 20%, 3%, it cannot be the most prominent figure. Can you put other things in the ad, like rebates that are applicable to members of the military? Certainly you can, and they've said that. It cannot be the most prominent item. And you've got to make clear who it is applicable to. You cannot make it seem like it's applicable to more than its stated terms. So they talk about some basic things there. You know, we could get into more. They say don't advertise unavailable vehicles. Their real point there is don't make someone think that if you advertise a vehicle and they can walk on the lot and get it, if they can't do that, you need to make that clear. Explain it's unavailable. When would it become available? Give a sense for when that is. Again, they're looking at it through the eyes of an ordinary, reasonable consumer. And of course, there's other issues we could get into, such as control. They're very focused on who is controlling the ad content. Of course, we're trying to educate the FTC on that. We're saying, yes, dealers have a lot of responsibility here. They're responsible for their ads. But in many cases, it's the OEM that controls the ad content. And the OEM needs to work with dealers to get to the right spot here. So do web providers. So do third-party sites. So everyone has a role to play. At its core, it's a very basic issue. There is a lot more nuance. We think the FAQs that will come out will be helpful. When we do see them, that might not be till the fall, but when we do see them, we think that will help to fill in the gaps.
Want to boost sales, sharpen leadership skills, and keep your dealership setting the pace? NADA Education delivers hands-on, real-world strategies that work. From education subscriptions through the academy, we help you drive performance every day. Shift into high gear at nada.org/education.
David, switching back over to ATD, in your opinion, what would repealing the federal excise tax, that tax that's been around since 1917, by the way.
A long time.
Right.
For businesses and truck dealers. What are the chances, do you think, it might actually happen in the next, this session or next session?
Yeah, we're well beyond the 100-year mark for the, when this tax was first imposed, but yeah, I think at the top of the or at the beginning of the podcast, Paul had commented on the highway bill, and that would be a major vehicle for which the FET would have the opportunity to be repealed. I think if you look at kind of what repealing the FET would mean overall, you know, it's a 12% federal excise tax on heavy duty trucks that really does put a really large price tag, an additional price tag on the sale of these vehicles to the tune of $20,000 or more. So I think when you look at what it means to repeal the tax, it's really about increasing the opportunity for America's truck dealers to sell cleaner and safer vehicles, commercial motor vehicles, Class A vehicles with the most advanced technology. We have a good portion of the trucking fleet that is pre-2010 models. So it's an aging fleet. It's a fleet that's emitting a lot of particulate matter, nitrogen oxide. So repealing that tax would do a lot to spur fleet turnover. I think when we look at the FET repeal, we're also very thankful for Congressman LaHood taking over leadership of the House bill, H.R. 2424, and due to the unexpected passing of Congressman LaMalfa. I'll tell you what, this podcast couldn't have been better timed because yesterday we just had the Senate introduce its bipartisan legislation to repeal the tax. So ATD and the industry, I'm sure, is very thankful for Senators Todd Young, as well as Angela Alsobrooks, for introducing their FET repeal legislation in the Senate. And we have a nice bill number there, S-4657. So I'm optimistic. I'm confident Congress is going to take a closer look at the funding mechanisms that feed into the Highway Trust Fund, and confident that they'll come up with a solution to make the Highway Trust Fund more solvent and funded by revenue mechanisms that are more user-based, which the FET is not.
Something that's been around for 100 years doesn't have to be around for another 100 years.
No, it's interesting. When you look at the FET, it came at a time where there was a national need, and it was to pay for a war. And I would argue that today there's a national need to repeal the tax because there's a national need for cleaner, safer trucks on our roads today.
Absolutely. So switching back over to Paul, we've been hearing about tariffs all year, but I think our members will want to know, are dealers eligible for any of these tariff refunds?
As a general matter, no. And I'll explain. First of all, keep in mind the tariffs that the administration has put in place that apply to the auto sector are largely still in place. This issue is more on the periphery that we're talking about here. One authority the president had been relying on, it was under a law known as the International Emergency Energy Power Act. Again, most auto tariffs are not even touched by this, but for those that are, you can refund or seek a refund of the money that was collected by the tariffs, but only if you're an importer of record or you're a licensed customs broker. Most dealers do not fit that classification. OEMs, yes. Dealers, no. So it's very unlikely that dealers will be able to apply for a refund under that limited authority that was struck down.
So how about catalytic converter theft? It still is a pretty costly issue for all of our members and their customers, obviously. You don't have to go very far to find stories about this. So what's the latest news on the PART Act that would help police actually combat this issue with the stolen catalytic converters?
Yes. Now, this is when I was talking earlier about the surface transportation bill, I was saying it can present a lot of challenges, some of these federal preemption concerns and the Repair Act and the like. But it also presents some opportunities. David flagged one of them, right? FET repeal. It would be great to attach that. And here we have catalytic converter theft and the PART Act that would help address it. And we hope that the surface transportation bill could include a provision that would include the PART Act. And this, of course, would basically say that if your catalytic converter needs to have an identifier that's traceable to the VIN, law enforcement has said that's very important. It would strengthen penalties for catalytic converter theft. It has broad scale support, Michael, as you were suggesting. So this is a great measure. We know there's a lot of member of Congress, a lot of co-sponsors. It's bipartisan. Both parties have recognized the value of this. We really hope the surface transportation bill can be a mechanism to try to get this passed. It was not included, by the way, in what the House Energy and Commerce Committee just passed. These auto-related bills, there's still a possibility to get it in there, and we're working very hard to make sure that happens.
So, David, I know you've got a big, important event coming up. I think it's in 3 weeks. Can you give us a quick overview of the upcoming ATD legislative fly-in and how it's so important to both our truck and car members? Because I think you'll be talking about most of these issues with our members of Congress, right?
That's exactly right. So we do have it coming up in just about 3 weeks, just less than 3 weeks, actually. So we have the fly-in scheduled to take place June 22nd and 23rd. That's a Monday, Tuesday schedule. You know, we're in a very good place right now. We're well positioned for success. We do have 89 registered attendees. A great majority of those are truck dealers, our ATAEs, and of course the board. This also is an opportunity to hear from a number of leaders in Congress and across the industry. We got a great speaker lineup as well. For those attending, they can hear from Senator Bernie Moreno, who's talked a bit in one of his plans about the federal excise tax and repealing that. So it's expected that he'll weave in some of those comments in his remarks. We have Congressman Jeff Hurd scheduled as well, who will highlight, surface transportation reauthorization and some of the action that's happening there. And also during our program, we'll hear from, ATA experts, including Bob Costello, in combination with our very own Patrick Monzi to deliver an economic update. And I think the program probably finished off before we go to our Hill meetings with Chris Spear. So, it's a lot of industry, a lot of great speakers from members of Congress, and overall an opportunity for truck dealers to keep the drumbeat going on priorities related to much of what we talked about here today, repealing the FET, talking to members of Congress about so-called right to repair legislation, and of course the PART Act as well. So to address not only catalytic converter theft, but on the truck side, the theft of diesel particulate filters, as well as diesel oxidation catalysts. So.
And you say it's a great time. You got a few bills introduced and stuff. And realistically, as you've mentioned, all of the initiatives that we have working as an association have bipartisan support. And that's a pretty good indication that they just make sense, So again, thank you for that. And thanks for putting us all in that particular position. Paul and David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
That's all the time we have for today's episodes. A big thank you to Paul Mitri and David Bell for joining us. Just to highlight, we mentioned the ATD fly-in, which takes place June 22nd and 23rd. And also to highlight the Automotive Washington Conference, which also is a fly-in in essence, and all congressional meetings and everything else to be able to advocate all of our positions. And that takes place this year, September 15th and 16th. Once again, I'm Michael Hayes.
And I'm Cameron Wilson. This has been Dealer Driven from NADA. Keep your dealership in drive, and we'll see you next time.